Hey everyone, this is Isabel here from the Holy Raw Nutrition Podcast. This is episode number 2, and I'm so excited because today we're going to talk about how to make the switch. So a lot of people want to know how to get their dog started or cat started on a raw diet, and some people are ready to just jump right on in, and some people need a little bit more prep and a little bit more understanding as to why that their dogs and cats are meant to eat a raw diet. So for those of you who don't know me, again, my name's Isabel. I am a certified small animal naturopath as well as a carnivore nutritionist. I focus on nutrition for dogs and cats as nature intended for them to eat. So we focus on a species appropriate diet. I have my own store here in Chelsea, Quebec, where me and my team take care of hundreds of pets each month, and we offer a wide variety of raw food, holistic supplements, all natural treats, and we source everything local. So my goal during these podcasts is to empower you as a pet owner so that you have the knowledge and the tools necessary to make the right health choices for your pets. So I figured, why not podcasts? It makes it very easily accessible for people on your drive into work. And yeah, so let's get into it. So today's podcast is how to make the switch. I'm here to tell you that it's going to be okay. If you are on the fence about raw feeding, I'm here to tell you it's really not as complicated as people make it seem. It's actually quite the opposite. This is going to be one of the best health decisions that you could possibly make for your companion animal, and it's one that you're definitely not going to regret. So in today's podcast, we're going to talk about 1, how to make the switch, 2, the quality, the quantity, and the frequency, and 3, the benefits of raw. I will add a little bit the anatomy of the dog and the cat, just so that you have a better understanding as to why they're made to eat a raw diet, so that you have the confidence necessary to explain it to someone else if need be. The first question I always have for clients is, does your pet have allergies? It is so common today, so that's why it's really important to just like get that out of the way, make sure that there's no intolerances involved. If your pet is generally healthy and has like good skin, healthy skin, has no ear infections, no health issues, this is a really good sign that you have overall healthy pet. So the easiest protein to start with in this case would be chicken or turkey. They are the easiest proteins to digest, which is what you want when you're first starting on raw. So I would stick to these proteins for the first week or two. You're going to be able to identify how they're doing with that protein based on their stools. So if they have healthy, firm stools, then it's a really good indication that they're doing well. And then you can start introducing organ meats such as liver, kidney, in the percentage that you need them. Once they do well with that, then you would introduce a new protein such as anywhere in between duck and or pork. You want to start introducing the lighter proteins, the different types, and working your way up to redder and redder meats, because the redder the meat, the richer it is. So that's why it's good to go gradual. So for instance, when I'm starting my kitten or my puppies on raw, I start with chicken, then I go to turkey, then I go to duck, then I go to rabbit, then I go to pork, then I go to beef, bison, if I can get it, venison, and then salmon. Salmon is usually the last one I introduce because I find it quite rich. So that's how I go about it. And then what if you have an animal that has allergies? If you're not sure what to feed your pet, what I would strongly recommend you do is do a biofeedback test. So this is a test that is easily accessible. This is not your traditional allergy test. So a traditional allergy test, they would do blood work and then they would test your dog for allergies. And then whereas a biofeedback test, what I really like about this is that it's a non-invasive test using your dog's saliva and your dog's hair. And this is based, so whatever is highlighted on that biofeedback test, this is what's going to set your dog or cat's body out of balance, quote unquote. I've been using this for the last 3 years with my clients, and I've been able to build customized meal plans and supplement plans based on the test results, and it's been pretty successful. But just like an allergy test, not 100% accurate. In my experience, it's been really a great tool to have. So based on this test, once you've received it, I would recommend you start either with a turkey, duck, or rabbit, based on whichever one of those is not highlighted, because those are pretty easy to digest. A lot of people think just because their pets are quote unquote allergic to chicken, that they'd be allergic to duck because it's a poultry. But oftentimes it's actually not the case. And a lot of our allergy clients do actually really well on the duck. Once you've started your pet with allergies onto raw, on either of those proteins, then based on your biofeedback test, you would go and introduce them to the redder and redder meats. At the end of the day, guys, the most important thing is variety. So you want to start gradual when you're introducing each different protein, but variety is key. You can't possibly sit down yourself and have a quote-unquote perfectly balanced meal. It's non-existent. This you acquire through balance over a one-week period. So this is balance over a seven-day period. So that's why variety is so important. So like I said, 2 to 3 different proteins a week is going to maximize your dogs and cats' nutritional intake, because different herbivores forage on different plant matter, meaning that their flesh contain different vitamins and minerals. I hope that makes sense. Lastly, about pets with allergies, if your pet has like a lot of other underlying health issues, as well as allergies and like tons of skin problems, in this case, I would strongly recommend that you seek a nutritionist, because they can help guide you with a custom meal plan, supplement plan for your pet's overall well-being. So allergies is an imbalance, and a trained naturopath can help your pet overcome these imbalances with time. Yes, allergies can go away with time. How much to feed? Is your pet at a healthy weight? Is your pet a little sausage, meaning like they look like a little walking barrel? Or can you see the last rib and that divot from the last rib to the hips? This is what you want. Oftentimes people like come into my shop and they're like, wow, yeah, my dog's at a perfect weight. I'm like, oh, no, actually, your dog needs to lose and shed a couple pounds. And I never say that in a judgmental way. Like, honestly, I really just say those things for the well-being of the animal, because it's really important for people to at least look at the ideal body weight chart online at least once, so that they can have an idea, because we live in a world where like overweight is normal, and in animals and reality it's not healthy. So it is good to identify this. Once you've identified where your dog and cat meets on the scale, let's say your pet is at an ideal weight, then you would feed them 2% of their body weight. If you're dealing with a kitten or a puppy, try and see from the breeder if you can find out from the breeder how much mom and dad weigh, then you can have an idea how much your puppy or your kitten's gonna weigh. And you can base off, like, let's say you have a male, you'd base it closer in between mom and dad, but closer towards dad's weight. And if it's a female, closer to mom's weight. Let's say your dog is a border collie and it's going to be 50 pounds. You would do 2% of 50 pounds, which is going to give you 1 pound of food per day. So that's for puppies and kittens. I go based on their expected adult body weight. If they aren't getting enough weight for their growth, being too thin, you just simply increase it. That's it. You just simply increase the amount per day. And then if they are actually becoming overweight, then you just slightly decrease. It's really that simple. Adult dogs that are overweight, you would only feed them 1.5% of their current body weight until you've gotten to their ideal body weight. If you have a highly active dog, so if you have like sledding dogs, or you just run a lot with your dog, or your dog is overly just active, then you want to feed them anywhere between 2.5% to 4% of their body weight. So for instance, my dog is actually really not that active, but she has a really crazy fast metabolism. Each pet is individual is what I'm getting at, okay? So for instance, Ayla needs to eat 3% of her body weight to maintain a healthy weight. Cats are pretty good at self-regulating. For instance, right now my kitten is eating 2.5% of her expected adult body weight. and she will like eat as much as she can, and then she'll actually turn away and walk away. So as far as frequency goes and how much you should be feeding kittens and puppies from the moment you get them up to the age of 5 months old should be fed their daily amount divided into three portions. 5 months and up, cats should be fed more frequently because naturally in the wild they would hunt more frequently. So I keep cats at being fed twice a day, whereas puppies between the age of 5 months and 1 year old, I feed them twice a day, and then from 1 year up they are only fed once a day. That's for dogs. And studies have actually proven that dogs live a much healthier life when they're only being fed once a day, because think about it this way: it takes about 8 to 10 hours for them to digest their raw food, and then the remainder of that 24-hour period their body is fasting, and instead of focusing its energy on digesting food, it's focusing its energy on healing the body or whatever needs cleaning out as far as detoxing. So this makes for an overall much healthier pet. You never want to fast puppies or kittens under the age of one. You don't want to fast cats at all. Cats do need to eat a couple times a day, but dogs after the age of one, I actually fast my dogs once a week. So I'll feed them a day and a half worth of food the day before the fast, and then a day and a half worth of food after the fast. This is to give them a system a full 24 hours without food so they can really focus on healing. And I think that's partly why Ayla has such an amazing metabolism. Another thing too, we tend to really humanize our dogs. So I say that because as humans, we eat more frequently in a day, and that's what's good for us as a species. Dogs, however, it's first of all best for them to not know when they're going to be fed and to be as random as possible. A lot of people have a schedule. Okay, so they'll feed their dogs at 6 a.m. and then at 6 p.m. at night. I'm here to tell you, you don't want to do that. And the reason why you don't want to do that is because you start making the system work like clockwork. Okay, so if you get in the rhythm of doing that, what's going to happen with your dog is that they're going to start creating digestive juices about 20 minutes before the quote unquote expected feeding time. And so that's why you might have noticed this. If you forget to feed them at that expected feeding time, they're going to puke up yellow bile. For me, for instance, I feed my dogs once a day. I'll feed them one day in the morning. The next day, it'll be at like 8 p.m. at night. My dogs never know when they're going to get fed. So one, this is beneficial because they don't beg. And two, I never setting their system up to work like clockwork. They just don't know when they're going to be fed next. So this is to their benefit. For our digestive systems, I'm just going to kind of quickly touch base as to how come we are different. Humans actually have an enzyme in their mouth called amylase, which we start digestion from our mouth. So when we eat vegetable matter, plant matter, carbohydrates, we start digestion from our mouth with that enzyme called amylase. Okay. Dogs actually, and cats, have an enzyme in their mouth called lysozyme, which helps kill harmful bacteria from the entrance in the mouth. That's why they can eat like dead meat. That sounds weird. It's like, you know, when your dog found like a mole outside that your cat killed and they're crunching on it. Well, this is one of the reasons why they don't get sick, is because they have that enzyme in their mouth. So that enzyme, again, I'll say it, is called lysozyme, which helps kill harmful bacteria from the entrance of the mouth. So dogs and cats actually don't start digestion from their mouth. They start digestion from their stomach. Humans have a digestive system that's 10 to 12 times the length of our body. So that is for when we eat vegetation, like plants, and when we eat vegetables or grains, whatever. It goes through the fermentation process. So when we eat carrots and stuff, it's in our system for so long that it starts to ferment. And then that's how one of the ways our gut lining absorbs those nutrients is through that fermentation process, okay? And Dogs and cats, however, they have a so cats have a digestive system that's only four times the length of their body. So this is what makes them an obligate carnivore. Okay. And dogs have a digestive system that's 5 to 6 times the length of their body. So just slightly longer. That's for quick intake and quick exit, because the way Mother Nature created them is for them to eat a raw diet. And so it's a short digestive system so that bacteria doesn't have time to culminate. So if you actually compared the anatomy of a dog and a wolf, you will see absolutely no difference. Just out of plain curiosity, go home, do a Google search, check out the skeleton of a German Shepherd and the skeleton of a wolf, and you will see absolutely no difference between the anatomy, the teeth, everything, the digestive system. Did you know that dogs are actually 98.8% mDNA to wolves? So that means, yes, we've domesticated dogs, but their nutritional requirement is absolutely no different than that of a wolf. So just their teeth alone tells us what they're meant to eat. They don't have flat molars like omnivores. This goes for both dogs and cats. They actually have sharp canines, sharp molars, sharp premolars, carnassial, and that is made for catching prey animals, tearing off meat from the meat and flesh from the bone, and to be able to crush bones. And sometimes people are like, oh my gosh, my animals are just like swallowing their meals whole. Well, that's how Mother Nature intended for them to eat, because in case if they had competition around them, other predators around them, they could easily swallow their meal and then that's it, that's all. So that's why they actually have twice the amount of saliva than we do, so that they could easily hack up chunks that were too big to swallow, chew again, swallow whole, okay? Then the next thing is they have a pH in their stomach, which is pH 1, which is almost the equivalent of battery acid. So that's why they can eat raw bones and it'll literally incinerate in their system and you don't see it on the other end. That pH level helps kill any possible bacteria that may have survived. Also, dogs have in their pancreas, that's the only spot they really produce amylase enzymes. So when you're giving them highly processed foods and or vegetables, this is actually asking the pancreas to secrete extra amounts of amylase enzymes to break down that food that they're not genetically made to digest, and you're asking more of the pancreas. So over time, when people are feeding their dogs or cats a processed diet, that's why you'll hear the word pancreatitis. So what that means is inflammation of the pancreas, and that's because it's been taxed for so long and working so hard. Whereas if they're fed a raw diet, they won't have that problem because those amylase enzymes are there for the odd maybe stomach content that they will eat when they're eating an entire rabbit, for instance, or a whole squirrel, or for the odd herbs that they might forage out in the wild, or the possible grasses they eat. But even then, when you see them eating grass, you always see it come out the other end because they do not have the enzymes that we have to help actually properly break those foods down. So that's why you'll hear people like that are doing a barf diet, that they steam their vegetables and then they turn it into a smoothie. So something that's actually more natural for dogs especially would be wolves. You'll spot wolves actually eating berries, but you can actually grab a berry and you can squish it with your finger. So that goes to show you how more easy that could be to assimilate for a carnivore, for a dog, and you'll see wolves eating them as well. But they get the most vitamins and minerals through the flesh, the organs, and the bones from the prey animal. So people often ask me, well, if I'm not giving my dogs vegetables, well then, how are they going to get those nutrients? Dogs and cats get those same nutrients through the flesh of the herbivore. So that's why I've said that the variety is so important, because when the herbivores are foraging on different plant matter, and through that process of digesting, they are absorbing those nutrients from whatever it is they're foraging, and it goes into their flesh, into their organs. That's how our carnivore pets benefit is by eating those herbivores, because those nutrients are in their flesh. So there's a really great chart of raw food chart of all the different proteins and all the different vitamins and minerals that those proteins contain. So if ever you're worried about any possible nutrient gap, that's just like a quick, you know, in a nutshell about their anatomy. By the way, like, there's so much more to it, and I strongly recommend that you do your homework, because those are really big differentiations between a human's anatomy and a dog and cat's anatomy. We are made completely different, so that's why it's really important that we respect them as a species, right? But lastly, like, dogs have an elastic like stomach to be able to consume up to 20% of their body weight, so that it can suffice them for days on end if need be. So totally different species compared to us. And like I was saying, if ever you're worried about any possible nutrient gap that could be missing from your dog's diet, here's a few key things that are really important. One, it's really important about the quality of the meat that you're getting, because animals that are fed, or that are grass-fed, for instance, and are on a rotational grazing field type setup, those animals are going to have the perfect balance of nutrients, but also the perfect balance of omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. Okay, omega-6 is inflammatory, omega-3 is anti-inflammatory. So if you're feeding them grain-fed animals that you would get from the grocery store that is like mass-produced and industrialized, they're going to be higher in omega-6. So that meat will technically be possibly more inflammatory. That's why you want to get quality meat that is locally farmed, grass-fed, free-ranged, because it'll have a nice balance of omega-3 to omega-6. Now, if you're still worried about a nutrient gap, for dogs, cats, they really just need to eat raw food. That's it. Raw meat, bones, and organs. For dogs, you can do things like nutritional herbs that are considered your superfood. So I personally, my go-tos is alfalfa powder. I do things like spirulina by Earthrise. This one is a fantastic superfood. You never want to get a spirulina from like China, for instance. You really want to get it from a quality source. So Earthrise is a fantastic company, full transparency. You can see how they do the spirulina. It's really good. This is a superfood, a really high quality New Zealand greenlit mussel, and or nettle. These are all things they could forage for. Okay, so you want to think as close to nature as possible when you're feeding your dogs and your cats. That's my biggest recommendation. All right. A big thing too is don't forget to feed your dogs and cats edible bones. We will not get into periodontal disease today, but this is so crucial, because people, you don't need to brush your dogs and cats' teeth. That's not normal, okay? The reason why you're having to do that is because kibble is processed 3 times at 350 degree levels, leaving 0 nutritional value. And what is happening there is those starches and sugars are feeding the bad bacteria in your dog's mouth and your cat's mouth, and that bacteria doesn't need air to breathe, okay? So that's, it creates a biofilm, and that biofilm turns into plaque and tartar. So to get optimal teeth cleaning benefits, you want to feed your dogs and cats edible bones. So this is what you call your whole prey model style. This is how I personally really love to feed my guys. So edible bones are examples like whole quail, chicken necks, chicken carcass, chicken feet, duck necks, turkey necks, whole rabbit. That's just to name a few. So the difference between edible bones and recreational bones is weight-bearing bones. So anything that holds weight. So example, soup bones, beef marrow bones, pork marrow bones, necks are not, like, beef necks are too thick and too dense, depending. Sometimes they'll eat a bit of the vertebrae, but every time I've seen a coyote kill with like a deer or something, they tend to leave all that there. So those are just some examples of the difference between recreational bones and edible bones. A huge misconception is people like, I can't feed my dog chicken bones or my cat chicken bones because that's dangerous. Only cooked chicken bones are dangerous because it's been dehydrated, it becomes brittle and sharp, and that's where it can create danger. Whereas raw chicken bones crumble and break really nicely. Okay, some of the benefits you're going to get with feeding raw is you're going to get much cleaner teeth for sure, because with raw feeding, that pH balance is going to be healthy, whereas kibble actually changes and alters the pH balance, making our pets more susceptible to bacteria and health issues, okay? You're also going to notice a much shinier, healthier coat. The reason why you're going to notice a shinier, healthier coat is because your dog's and cat's system is absorbing all the nutrients from this diet. And another indicator of that actually happening is the size of their stools. And their size of stools on kibble is 3 times larger than on raw. And with the raw diet, the stools are going to actually go turn into powder and go right back into the ground after a week. That's because it doesn't have a bunch of preservatives and additives to preserve the stool, okay? All the possible quote-unquote benefits, okay, I'm doing quotation here, of kibble is just going out. So as I earlier explained, kibble is cooked 3 times at 350 degree levels, okay? It strips all of the nutrients out of that food, okay? And then they spray synthetic vitamins and minerals. Synthetic vitamins and minerals. The reason why I'm emphasizing this is because synthetic vitamins and minerals, sure, it's vitamins and minerals, but it does not mean bioavailability. Bioavailability is what they get when they're eating wholesome foods, like raw food, what they have been genetically designed to eat. It's just like for our an example for us humans, we are getting bioavailable nutrients through fruits, through vegetables, through whole foods, okay? These are bioavailable nutrients. So kibble is sprayed with synthetic vitamins and minerals, and then it's layered with a coat of grease to make it appealing to our pets, and then it's got a shelf life. It's got a bunch of preservatives, so it has a shelf life for over a year. So just because there's synthetic vitamins and minerals, it does not mean that what you're feeding your dog that's highly processed or your cat is going to be absorbable by any means or beneficial as opposed to a raw diet. That's why their stools are so much larger when they're being fed a processed diet, because they're actually not absorbing the nutrients from it, but they absorb all the nutrients from the raw diet, hence why the stools are smaller. Okay, so that's a big one. Also, you're not going to notice that stinky dog, wet dog smell that you get from a kibble-fed animal. Also, the cognitive function out of a dog and a cat that are fed raw is so much more superior, because when the gut is healthy, then the brain is healthy, okay? So the brain is actually telling the body when to secrete X, Y, and Z hormones to keep the body in homeostasis, to keep the body in balance based on what you're feeding that gut. So the healthier the gut, the healthier the hormones, the healthier the brain, the healthier the body. Okay. That's why raw diet is also so important. Another huge, huge, huge aspect too is they're going to get, especially for growing kittens and puppies, they're going to get adequate calcium through that bone content that they're getting, those edible bones. So what you'll notice is, have you ever noticed like a dog or a cat that has like really dainty bones? Like, you know that dog is supposed to have a thicker bone structure, and then sometimes those dogs' bones will break easier. So like, for instance, you'll notice this a lot in small breeds, and when they jump off the couch, they break a bone really easily. That's because they didn't get enough calcium during their puppy and kitten phase. Okay, so when they're missing calcium in their growing phase, they'll actually take away from their own source of calcium through their teeth or their bones. So it makes them for having more brittle bones when they're adults. You won't get that with a raw diet because they're going to get adequate calcium levels to ensure healthy bone structure, healthy teeth and all. Okay. So that's another benefit of raw. Another benefit of raw too is an overall healthier immune system. Again, that has to go with the gut. The gut is responsible for 80% of the immune system. So when you're feeding the gut a healthy diet, then the overall immune system will also be healthy. So these are just some of the health benefits. Also, a lot of pets with allergies or imbalances, a simple diet change to a species-appropriate diet, which is a raw diet, is going to help your pet a lot. So I know that was a lot of information. I hope that I've helped simplify and give you enough confidence necessary to go about raw feeding. I'm going to recommend you some of these amazing books that I have in my library that have been a complete game changer in my life. These are a must-have. If you want to like become even more confident and get more of the science and get more of the anatomy and get more information onto raw feeding, here's a few books that I strongly recommend. So I just got this book called Feline Nutrition by Lynn Curtis. I'm really excited about this one. I've got a kitten that I'm completely in love with, and I'm much more of a dog person, but she's making me into a hardcore cat person. Anyways, this is really fantastic. It talks about taurine. Cats actually get taurine through their diet, whereas like dogs get it, can manufacture their own taurine. So you only need to worry about taurine supplementation if you're buying bulk food and you're freezing your batches for more than 2 weeks, because the longer the food is frozen, the less taurine value there is. And there's lots of taurine in chicken hearts. So this is a natural way of getting taurine to your cat's diet. So you can get fresh chicken hearts weekly, for instance, and then you don't want to give them more than 7 chicken hearts a day because that'll just exceed taurine value. So that's just a little bit of knowledge right there and a little bit what she talks about in the book. And then for just getting the confidence to get your cat and your dog started on raw, the easiest book I ever read was Work Wonders, Feed Your Dog Raw Meaty Bones. This is written by Dr. Tom Lonsdale. I love him because he keeps it so simple, so real, so close to nature. And that's what I really love. That really resonates with me. So this is a really great book to just get you started and a really easy read. I read it in a day. I read it in 3 hours. So very easy read, gives you all the confidence and the tools necessary to go about raw feeding. If you want to get a little bit more technical, his book Raw Meaty Bones by Dr. Tom Lonsdale is his thicker one. And this one like gets you right into the science and like into the truth of what's going on in the food industry for animals and how it's not regulated, et cetera, et cetera. So that one's a fantastic read. And then lastly, Inner Carnivore by Jennifer Lee is also a fantastic read. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I'd love to get your feedback. Again, follow us on Holy Raw Nutrition. We have a Facebook page and Instagram page. So Holy Raw as in HOLIRAW Nutrition. And if you have any questions or inquiries about raw feeding and or you'd like to book a consultation for your pet, you can email us at holyrawnutrition@gmail.com. That's a wrap, and I hope you enjoy this podcast and looking forward to connecting with you guys the next time around. All right. Bye, everyone.